an artist that has really made a mark in this industry, has really kind of set the stage for a lot of things, made changes, creator of many, many genres within a genre. The artist that Leroy Downs will have on in just a moment. If you want more information regarding Leroy Downs and the Jazz Cat, go to his website. I can't say enough about Leroy Downs. The Jazz Cat himself is an unusual individual. I mean, he really moves along with the artists very easily. The interviews move along similar, and they're very in-depth and yet very respectful. And that is why, if you go to the Jazz Cat's website, which is www.thejazzcat.net, you will see and hear many, many interviews. It's more of like who's list of jazz luminaries, but there's also a lot of individuals that are on, you know, really are going to set the stage for the future of jazz. Here's an individual that has really made it possible for myself to be on here, for example, or for a lot of artists to be even recognized in the jazz world, the Monterey Jazz Festival, and a number of other festival events. So without further ado, I just want you to understand how much respect I have for the individual that the Jazz Cat is bringing on today, and also how much respect I have for Leroy Downs for providing this venue for the artist himself. So without further ado, let me bring on Leroy Downs, the host of the Live with the Jazz Cat show. Hi, Leroy.
Oh, beautiful. You know, jazz music is so wonderful, and it does so much for our lives, and these people that created all the musicians, we owe it to them, and especially this gentleman right here, Mr. Kenny Barron, I have with me today. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, how you feeling?
I'm beautiful, man. How
good.
Are you?
I'm having a great time.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Are you in New York?
Yes, I am, in Brooklyn.
You know what? I was just in Brooklyn yesterday. I just got back.
Oh, okay.
And weather's nice and beautiful.
It's raining now.
Oh, okay. That started yesterday. But I, this time in New York, I went by Ground Zero. You know, today is a poignant day in our history. I mean, does it or did it have any musical implications for you?
I can't say it had musical implications. It's just a very sad day because I watched it unfold on television that morning.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a very sad day.
Well, you'll be performing this year at the Monterey Jazz Festival. Last time you were there, I had the honor to MC on your stage, and I'll be able to do that again.
Oh, but, great, all right.
But your flight problem, you had flight problems last time. You've been traveling for over 18 hours, and you still got in and mesmerized the crowd.
I think you got in just in the nick of time, I think.
Yeah.
I remember, yeah.
Well, this time you'll be coming from France, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Well, you know, you always hear stories of Miles, Monk, Train, Mingus, but you were back then playing and watching and learning the music as well. What can you tell us about, you know, whom you grew up with and playing and how you developed your theories and approach to the music?
Well, I grew up in Philadelphia, and I started studying piano when I was 6 years old. And I was fortunate enough to have an older brother, play tenor saxophone Bill Barron, who preceded me. But I was fortunate enough to have him as as a big influence, because when I was a kid, he had a big collection of 78 records. You know, like Charlie Parker and Dizzy and Fats Navarro and Dexter Gordon, people like that. So I got to hear all this music, you know. And he also got me my very first gig playing the same band that he played in. I think I was like 14 years old. So for me, that was a really great experience. And then as I got older, I started to meet, because these are all older guys.
Right.
And as I got older, like in high school, I started to meet, you know, some guys who were closer to my own age, like Sonny Fortune, for instance, I grew up with. And there was another saxophone player named Jimmy Bass, passed away. Lee Morgan, who was a few years older than me. Yeah. These are guys that I had a chance to be around in Philadelphia. Spanky DeBrest, wonderful bassist. So those are the kind of people I grew up listening to around Philly. You know, again, they were a few years older than me. McCoy Tyner.
Right.
Was another one I had a chance to hear in Philly.
You know, it's always interesting because my approach, you know, I'm born in 63, so being younger and finding the music myself, I never really know sometimes, you know. I just think of all the older players. I don't know who's younger or who was looking up to who or who was the same age, so they're all in kind of one box to me
sometimes.
Until you look at everyone's birthday and see who's a little older.
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
Well, you know, it seems like record companies these days, they have their idea about, you know, what's going to sell, what tune should be played or sung, who the audience is. With all of these statistics, you know, they're pretty much on track for their formula. How are the deals done with creative artists these days? Do you record an album first and shop it, or is there trust in the performer, or is there some sort of shared creative control?
I don't know. It's a whole another ball game today. There's not that much jazz being recorded by major labels, anyway. I mean, that's almost non-existent, you know, unfortunately. So a lot of people who want to record, I mean, they wind up doing it themselves, paying for it themselves, and shop it around, or perhaps go to a label, an independent label, may put it out, you know. But I think the days of major jazz labels, I think that's kind of over, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I mean, you know, it may be the incentive that musicians needed to try and do some things for themselves.
Well, musicians do seem to have control of the music, and it's in their own hands these days. It's just a little harder to distribute in such large...
Yeah, I think that's happening more and more. I mean, musicians are much more in control, you know, controlling their own publishing and owning the masters that they record and things like that, you know. So, yeah, I think that's a positive thing. You know, the biggest part is the biggest hurdle is distribution, mass distribution. You know, but there are people who do that. You know, there are distributors, national distributors. So there's a way to work it out.
Well, with good music, there's always a way.
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that.
You're listening to Kenny Barron right here on the show Live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM, KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio. Well, speaking of recordings and also speaking of Monk, you formed a band with Charlie Rouse and later Gary Bartz, Ben Riley, Buster Williams, that specialized in sphere music.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that was a great band, I thought. That was a great band, and it was a cooperative group. You know, there was no band leader as such. The band actually got together, Ben Riley and Buster and myself. We were actually part of Ron Carter's group. Mm. Ron Carter had a quartet, you know, with two basses.
Right.
And when that band broke up, the rhythm section, we decided to stay together and work as a trio, which we did for quite a while. But one of the things we would do is, when somebody would come into New York, sometimes we would serve as their rhythm section. Eddie Harris or Sonny Stitt or Lockjaw. A couple of times, you know. So I think it was Ben said, you know, why don't we get a horn player and see what we can do? And then he thought about, he said, wow, you know, I just heard Charlie Rouse not too long ago, and he sounded great. So we got a gig at a little club on 72nd Street in New York, and called Rouse just to kind of see how it would feel, and it felt great. So that was kind of the inception of Sphere, you know.
Certainly wanted to play some Monk music.
Yeah, yeah, you know, we wanted to play Monk's music, and then we had two guys in the band who had played with Monk. So we knew we would be playing it pretty correctly, you know. Yeah, but at the same time, we also wanted to do our own music and our own personal take on Monk's music.
Right.
You know, so, and I think we were pretty successful.
Yeah, I think you were, too. Well, you mentioned that band with Ron Carter. Ron played the piccolo bass in that band, correct?
That's true. That's right, yeah.
So this was an album called Cigarro.
Right, yeah.
At least that's the album that I recall. There probably were several more.
Yeah, that's the first one, actually.
Okay.
That was done live at Sweet Basil.
Ron Carter's actually here in Los Angeles playing at Catalina, so I'll be seeing him in a few short days, and I will make sure that I mention that Kenny Barron said hello.
Yeah, please.
You're listening to Kenny Barron right here on the show called Live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. My name is Leroy Downs, and it's on the Four Locals Only show with Mr. Gary Hamada. You know, I've seen you perform here in Los Angeles several times, once with Stefan Harris, and you had a few musicians from the Manhattan School of Music. And you also played a solo performance here at LACMA West not too long ago.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
What are those special things you see in your students that entice you to make them part of your traveling band?
I'm just a lot of promise, a lot of energy. You know, you probably heard the young lady who played drums.
Thompson?
Kim Thompson, yeah, yeah, you know. And I met her when she was in high school in St. Louis. And, you know, Ben Riley kind of took her under his wing. But I never heard her play until I was supposed to go to Cuba, the Havana Jazz Festival. And Ben got sick, and pretty sick, and he couldn't come. So I'm, and it was like just before, you know, and I'm scrambling trying to find a drummer.
Right.
And I happened to see her in the hallway in school, at Manhattan School of Music, where I was teaching at the time. And she was a student. So I said, listen, do you have a passport? She said, yeah. I said, you want to go to Cuba? She said, yeah. You know? So, you know, Rufus Reed was the bass player, and the first time I heard her play was actually at the sound check there in Havana.
Wow.
And blew me away.
What a beautiful opportunity for
you. You know, and, you know, when the situation came up, I put together a quintet, and that's who I wanted.
Oh, that's lovely. And, yeah, right. And there's another, a flute player by the name of Ann?
Ann Drummond, yes. Okay. In the same situation, similar situation. I met her, she was a high school student, and I met her in Idaho at the Lionel Hampton Jazz Festival, Moscow, Idaho. And she asked me about taking piano lessons, and at the time, I was teaching at Rutgers University, and I was just about ready to retire. So I said, well, no, I don't think so, you know.
Yeah.
And I did retire from there. And I was working at the Vanguard in New York, and she came in, and I guess she had just graduated, and she was getting ready to go to college. She asked me again about lessons. I said, well, no, I'm retired. And that year, about a week or two later, I got a call from Justin DeChocho at Manhattan School of Music, you know, about coming there to teach part-time. So I said, Sierra, okay. Sure enough, she was one of my students.
Oh, beautiful.
And but she was a piano student. She was a piano major. And she's an incredible pianist, you know. And I guess after about a month or a month and a half, she said, oh, I bought a new flute. Can we play some duets? Because I just want to try it out. So I was, sure, you know, okay. Same thing, blew me away. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, when I put together a quintet, you know, I had her. And she was also part of another group, a Brazilian group.
Canto Brasil?
Canto Brasil, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's one of the joys of teaching is running into, you know, extremely gifted young people.
And giving them opportunity to do their thing, that's a beautiful thing.
I'm happy to be, because somebody did it for me, you know.
Well, you know, usually musicians draw energy from the rest of the band. They get their ideas and inspiration. But for you, how do you dance with the space? How do you use your space when you perform solo? I mean, there's no one on stage.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Playing solo for me is probably the scariest thing of all.
I think I've heard that from a number of pianists.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's the scariest thing of all because you have no one you can lean on, as you mentioned. You know, it's just you. It's scary, but at the same time, if you're in the right frame of mind, it can be very liberating. Because you have nobody holding you back either.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so it all depends on upon your frame of mind, you know. And for me, like I said, the first song or so, I'm like a nervous wreck, you know. But once I get into it, then I start to relax a little bit. But it's one of the few times I get nervous when I play, is when I have to play solo.
Well, you know, you would never know because when you play your tune and then you turn around and you talk to the audience and get them involved. Once you get them smiling and laughing a little bit, you know you got them on your side. It seems like it all settles in really well, and you just start flowing.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's something to be said for putting the audience at ease and trying to do that, making them relax, and you know, because for a long time when I was, you know, when I was younger, I was very shy, so I would never say anything to the audience, you know, and I think sometimes they may have thought that I was aloof, you know, but that wasn't the case. I was scared, you know. You know, but as I, you know, I started to relax as I got a little older, and now you can't shut me up sometimes.
Nah. Well, we love to hear you talk, man, and we love to hear you play. I think it's a beautiful combination, you know, because the audience is part of the performance as well.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
And that particular audience that day was a listening audience, which probably most of your audiences are.
I've been very fortunate. You know, most audiences, I think most audiences now, most jazz audiences now, are really listening audiences. You know, I rarely do I run into an audience where that's noisy and everybody's talking. That just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. This is Kenny Barron right here on 1410 AM, KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. The show's called Live with the Jazz Cat, and you're listening to Leroy Downs, and it's on the For Locals Only show with Mr. Gary Hamada. Well, you know, you have quite an extensive recording career. I mean, usually leaning on the melodic loveliness of all of the music. You know, one of your latest recordings is called The Perfect Set, Live at Bradley's.
Oh, yeah.
what are all of the elements that are necessary that constitute perfection for you?
Well, I don't know that it was perfect, but yeah, everything just fell into place. You know, and that's a rare thing when that happens, where everything falls into place. Mm. You know, where they're those moments when you feel like you can't do anything wrong, and it's that you have the right rhythm section, everything is just right. The piano is right, the sound is right. I mean, those are rare moments, and you learn to appreciate those.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it was really just about everything just being perfect and just being in the right place. You know, all the elements coming together.
Well, I guess that has to do with, you know, the state of mind of the musicians, the environment, and of course the music that you either wrote or chose to do for the performance.
Yeah, all of those things count. All of those things make a difference. You know, and like I said, that particular night, everything just fell right into place.
Hey, I was looking at some pictures online, and I saw one with you and Danilo Perez, who's such a wonderful guy.
Oh, he sure is.
And you know, you have an affinity for some of these sexy, romantic Latin rhythms as well. I mean, how did a young cat from Philly develop that style?
I don't know. I guess when I first moved to New York, because I had, you know, in Philly, I never really heard a lot of Latin music. But when I moved to New York, I used to listen to, in 61, I used to listen to Symphony Sid on the radio. And he used to play a lot of salsa. A lot, you know, and I really got a chance to listen to that a lot. And then when I started working with Dizzy, you know, we did a lot of Brazilian music.
Yeah.
You know, and then I guess around 1965, I heard a group, you know, Sergio Mendes in Brazil 65.
Mm, yeah, beautiful.
And I really fell in love with, and that's kind of really, that really started my interest in Brazilian music. So I love it. Brazilian music, Latin music.
Yeah, I love Latin it. Music, Latin women, Latin countries. I understand. I understand. Well, you know, even though I mentioned Latin rhythms, you can never be locked into a box. I mean, you play so many different styles with so many different musicians and so many different configurations, and the music is at the highest quality. That's always the common denominator.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
So what do we have to look forward to in Monterey here in a couple of weeks?
Well, it's a trio that I've been using of late. It's a bass player from Japan, Kiyoshi Kitagawa, who's actually been playing with me for a while now. And the drummer is from Cuba, and his name is Francisco Mela. And he's very exciting and very loose. And So the music will probably be mostly originals,
yeah,
and some standards.
Well, we'll all be looking forward to, I will certainly be looking forward to introducing you on the Dizzy's Den stage.
Great, thank you.
So we look forward to seeing you there. Thank you so much. Kenny Barron on Live with the Jazz Cat. Thanks, Kenny.
Thank you.
You got it.
Thank you, gentlemen, and there you have it. The Live with the Jazz Cat show is aired every Tuesday here on Caramel Jazz and Blues Radio on the For Locals Only show at 5:14 p.m. And if you want to get a replay or if you want to check all the archives, this particular interview, of course, along with all the other stellar interviews with jazz luminaries, just like Kenny Barron, will be right there at his website. And that website is www.thejazzcat.net. And I assure you, you will not be disappointed. It is a terrific website. If you're into music or if you're into jazz, you will certainly get a different outlook, a different insight into all these really luminaries. I call them luminaries because there's so many that are really been very instrumental in the direction of jazz. And again, you heard Kenny Barron today, and a very insightful interview.